Ryan, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Wednesday version of our show. We're at 312-981-7200. Call in. Talk to us anytime you like. We're here for you.
You gave the number already?
Yeah, 312-981-7200.
Good job.
Call those numbers in that order. A couple of quick things. Thing number one is, you already know, Steve Bertrand is a scratch from today's lineup. Ryan Burrow will be filling his role. Steve is in Ireland. It's all part of the SteveBertrandTravel.com situation, where he just whisks people away to foreign countries and they enjoy themselves.
This is a Lou Gehrig, Wally Pipp situation, too.
Yes,
there you go.
Is.
So be ready.
Well, yes, it is.
You know, with SteveBertrandTravel.com, what's happening to SteveBertrandRadio.com?
Oh, I can't even begin to guess. I don't know. Wow. We're hoping the two of them can coexist. That's what everyone's hoping for. I also wanted to bring this up. After the show yesterday, I was looking at the headline of the Chicago Sun-Times through the whole show going, I want to read this story, and there wasn't time. And as soon as the show was over, I read the story, and it's a great story, and I just want to call it to everybody's attention. As you know, the Cubs received these World Series rings last week.
You know, these rings have turned into, like, they're cars. They're huge.
Right. There's a lot of diamondry involved.
Bling.
There's a lot. 1,908 diamonds make up the ring that has the Cubs logo on it. And then depending on who you are, it has your number on it. It has, on the inside of the ring, it has the scores of all the different series, you know, all the games and all the series. There's a microwave oven as part of the ring. You can heat up some buns or some whatever
there's
you want.
There's a goat on it,
there's
too.
There's a goat on
is
it.
Is there really?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Yes, there is.
Oh, please.
It could be used
alone.
As a helicopter if you're in an emergency and you need to be airlifted somewhere. There's a button that just makes you airborne.
That's why you want it, right?
That's one of the reasons I want it. Well, now the Cubs told people, and I think this is unprecedented. They're kind of gray on that in the story. But the Cubs have said to people who receive the rings, because it's not just the players. Like, you go, well, they made 25 of these rings, one for each player. And I guess Joe Maddon should get one and give one to the coaches. And I don't know, maybe the batting coach, you know, that kind of thing. But no, they gave away nearly 2,000 of these to
grounds crew and stuff.
Grounds crew got them. The guys who operate the scoreboard got them. The scouts of the team got them. A lot of people around the team. And you know what? What a wonderful gesture, because you would think, well, I work for the team. I'm in this office and I do that, but I'm not going to get a ring. No, they got a ring. Everybody got one of these rings.
They shouldn't have.
You don't think so? No.
That's just too much.
Well, by comparison, when the White Sox won the World Series last time, they had just over 600 of these made for, again, not just the team, but people who are contributors to the team. And the Cubs had nearly 2,000 of them, and it gets expensive.
And they had less diamonds.
The White Sox did have
less. I mean, the Cubs players got more diamonds on their ring than, like, the grounds crew or the.
Well, they are different rings. They're not the exact same.
They say there's different tiers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Right. And you can also get a facsimile of the ring. Because I was not given a Cubs ring.
Thinking about getting the.
I can't even afford the fake one.
$19.99 plus free shipping and handling.
Yeah.
Is what I hear. Yeah,
$2,000 for the fake one.
I got $20.
You got to be one of the first 20
right.
callers.
Yeah, because their supplies are limited. They're going fast.
Who is going to wear that?
You know,
I can think of about 5 million people that I saw on one day this summer that might wear that.
I was just going to say, you might think. Because if you meet a guy somewhere and he's got that ring, you go, wait, you're not on the Cubs.
Right.
Why do you have that ring? But I think there's a pride factor of, you know, you feel like you're part of it. You're wearing the ring.
What, because you're
not
a
fool
fan?
Anybody. Yeah, I know.
I'm a part of it.
I would love to have, like, if the opportunity was there to have one of the real ones, except, again, I can't afford the fake one, so to get a real one. But now the Cubs are clamping down on this. They sent out a letter to everybody who received the ring saying, we're not trying to ruin the mood. You know, we're thrilled the Cubs win, and we're so proud to give you one of these rings. But just so you know, person who just got a Cubs World Series ring, if you're thinking about selling it, we reserve the right to buy it for $1, which means if you worked for the Cubs and you said, boy, I love this ring, but I could get $50,000 for it if I put it on eBay. If you put it on eBay or put an ad on Craigslist or something like that, the Cubs can swoop in and go, oh, no, 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 here's a dollar. Give us the ring.
But what if you've come on tough times and it's your ring to sell?
Exactly.
You should be able to do it.
That's what
remember
people in
the fridge.
Say.
William yes. Perry had to sell a bunch of stuff.
I know.
And it's heartbreaking.
I know.
And Jim has something to mention too. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, is there a statute of limitations, you know?
It doesn't
because
say there is.
50 years from now, 20 years from now, you know, there'll be inheritance and things like that.
Right.
You know, it seems like
you're not going to keep track
property,
of all those.
It should be your property. Yeah.
When it says in the story that they want documentation. Like, if you're thinking about selling the ring, you have to submit to the Cubs front office documentation saying, here's what I'm selling and who I'm selling it to and for the price I'm selling. And then they'll make the decision of whether or not to swoop in and get the ring for a dollar or if you can sell it. And it said this is transferable. If you do sell it to somebody, like I said, on eBay or Craigslist or something, they can say down the line, well, you now have that ring, and we, the Cubs, the people who provided this ring, still have the opportunity to get it for a dollar.
What kind of a gift is that with all these provisions?
It says you can gift it. It says you can give it to a spouse or a grandchild or something like that. It says you can do that, but they want to keep track of who's got these rings and,
good luck.
And keep this order. I know. Two of the players refused to sign it. It doesn't say who they were, but two of the players go, we're not signing this.
I wouldn't have signed
it. Is there a disclaimer on tickets?
Is there one?
Yeah, I think you're not supposed to resell tickets.
Yeah,
either.
Right. Yeah, somebody in football got in a lot of trouble for that a couple years ago. I don't remember which player did, but some player did. Or a coach did. It was a coach, but I don't remember who it was.
Really?
Yeah. So what do you think, Jim? Do the Cubs have the right to do this? Can they say that?
Well, they did.
If they can say anything, but following up on it would be pretty tough.
I would imagine.
Although
because if you've
you
got
say,
it
hey,
in writing.
You know, someone wants to double your money on your ring, and you decide you're never going to wear it anyway because it's too big and too much of a target.
Yeah.
So you give it to your buddy. He paid you good money for it, and it's in his trophy case, and the Cubs will never see it.
Yeah.
I guess you could do it that way.
That's silly. You know, it's a waste of paper.
People sell things all the time behind the scenes.
Couldn't you also say you were giving it to somebody? Wendy, I'm not selling this ring to you. I'm giving you my Cubs World Series ring.
But then
and
you
if
expect
$25,000. Yeah. I would accept that money.
I wouldn't want to give it to you.
Interesting. Well, Jim, thank you for the call.
Yeah. Have
Take
a good
care.
Night.
You too. Ron wants in too.
All right.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, good morning, Wendy. Bill.
What do you think, Ron?
Have a great time listening to you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Listen, these guys, I know a gentleman whose nephew has two ALCS championship rings with the Tigers. He's
wow.
a scout.
Yeah.
Those guys don't make a lot of money, but remember, that ring is considered part of their salary, and they're going to have to pony up state and federal tax on that ring.
And those are expensive rings.
It does mention in the story that you are responsible for any taxes connected with this. It's a luxury tax you got
to
pay.
This is something that a lot of athletes have to deal with, even not just professional, but Olympians, when they come back home, they're supposed to pay some kind of taxes on that. Now, a lot of state lawmakers have, built in laws that say, no, you know what, you won the gold medal in wrestling, we're not going to tax you for it. But it is a constant issue that gets brought up.
And that shouldn't be, because those aren't professional athletes. The Olympics should be able
right.
to just give you it without paying taxes. But boy, Ron, thanks for popping our bubble.
Yeah, never forget that the burglar is in the room. So.
Always, yeah, right. Thank
anyway,
you, Ron.
Have a good one.
You too, Ron.
In the story, it mentions that there are players who, because even though when you think about a major league playing career, you say to yourself, well, if they make great money for 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years, that's tremendous. But there's a lot of players who are only in the major leagues for a year or two. So they're saying, even though that money is great, when you're earning it, all of a sudden, you're not making any money. So for a lot of players, as you mentioned, you got to make ends meet. And you sell one of these rings for $50,000 or $100,000, that's great money. So they're talking about that with players, but then they also say, so think about it, if you're just working for the team on some other capacity and you're never making great money, all of a sudden you're sitting on a ring that's worth all that money, you're tempted.
Well, good luck, Cubs organization.
Yeah.
I don't believe the players or the uniform staff are included in that $1 deal, but I'm wondering if this isn't really a gift from the Cubs, because if you have a a really aggressive tax attorney,
yeah,
you could say, well, the value of this ring is a dollar.
Right. You couldn't.
Oh.
You? In a weird way, it helps you with the taxes.
Again, if you want to push the envelope.
Right.
Oh, I say right. Push it.
Right. But, Steve, they make a point in the story of saying this includes everybody. This is for players, too.
I read something different. So.
Oh,
I,
did you? All right.
All right, you guys going to fight it out after the commercial break?
Right ahead.
No.
I don't know who to believe.
No.
Steve Alexander, Bill Leff.
Voice of reason.
I'm going Steve Alexander on this one, I think. Who's in for the big O?
I'm tempted to go Steve Alexander. We must take a break. Stick around. Oh, if you want to jump in, you know how to do it, right? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about the Cubs, who, according to the front page of the Chicago Sun-Times yesterday, have told everybody, or most everybody, who received a Cubs World Series ring, don't try to sell it. If you do, you have to let us know first, and we reserve the right to buy that ring back for $1. Now, here's the reason I believe that this included the players. It says here in the story, the edict was met by scorn by some of the players who won the team's first championship in 108 years, and at least two of them said they would not sign the agreement, sources told the Sun-Times. A team member who won multiple titles with another organization said he never had agreed to such terms with other teams. Now, Steve, are you still there, Steve?
I am.
All right. I know you have a business relationship with at least one member of the Chicago Cubs. Were they asked to sign this deal for the World
Series? Oh, I don't
know.
I was just going by something I read in the newspaper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Can't trust anything. Everything's fake news now.
It's got to be pretty easy to figure out who that player was, right? It was John Lester. I mean, who else has won multiple titles that's on that team right now?
I think that would be John Lester, I think, right? Although, well, Zobrist won one.
He won one with the Royals, but that's it. Then yeah. It's had multiple titles with different teams, right?
So that would be John Lester. Yeah.
They're giving too many clues. Why don't they just give his name at this point?
Anonymity.
I can't think of anyone else. That's got to be it,
I can't
right?
think of anyone yeah. else either.
Lackey, maybe, right?
Lackey, yeah. He
multiple?
Won one with the Cardinals, one with the...
Oh, yeah. Maybe
pitchers.
Maybe those are the two guys. I know, the pitchers are always
well,
the
it's the old. It's the old Divas. Pitchers, right? Both of them. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Although, who has a better record right now, Cubs or White Sox?
White Sox by a game.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are going to win the April World Series.
Never know. This was supposed to be a rebuilding year on the South Side, and
this whole week of Chicago sports has
what
been
do you mean,
turned
the Bulls, the Blackhawks?
None of it makes sense.
The Cubs went on a 4-game losing streak. The
right.
Bulls are winning for some reason. The Hawks can't figure it out.
Obama,
what the heck's going on?
It's Obama. It is Obama. The Bulls yesterday became the second team in NBA history to go up 2-0 as an 8 seed playing a 1 seed. It just doesn't happen.
I believe the other time was when Rose went out with the injury, right? You remember that when they lost to the Sixers? Didn't they
which
get
injury?
Swept out?
Maybe.
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, he's had a kind of a boatload of injuries.
But once again, the TNT Bulls. This isn't the normal Bulls. Are you guys familiar with the TNT Bulls?
No, what's that?
The Chicago Bulls have won 22 straight games on TNT.
Is that true?
It doesn't matter who they play. They could play the Warriors. They could play the Cavs. They could play the Nets.
They just have luck when they show
them
on TNT?
They have won 22 straight games on TNT. Oh. No one can explain this.
We go live to Dave Endett in the sports office.
Oh,
I just wanted to mention, though, it did happen in 1993. The Phoenix Suns lost the first 2 games at home to the Lakers. That was when they still had a best of 5, but they were the 1 seed. They came back and won the series, and they ended up going to the NBA Finals.
But at that point, Dave, you needed 3 wins, right? You didn't.
At that point, you needed 3 to win that yeah. series, yes.
Yeah.
But there have been a handful of teams that the 8 seeds over 1 seeds. There have been a few. Memphis a couple of years ago knocked out San Antonio in the 8-1. It has happened. The Celtics themselves, I think, knocked off, was it Cleveland? It was about, I don't know, 6-7 years
ago.
Yeah,
I remember.
Yeah. So it does happen once in a while, but it certainly doesn't happen very often. And the difference is winning those first 2 games on the road.
Right.
The teams that have done it haven't done that.
Wendy, as you know, on game days, Jimmy Butler and I do each other's hair.
He comes
to my house in the morning, and I do his hair, and he does my hair. And he said to me yesterday morning, he goes, I just feel this year's a little bit different. I said, what do you mean, Jimmy? And he goes, just watch tonight, and I think I'll show you what I mean. And he did. He had a great game. The team had a great game.
Well, I'm glad he's saying that to you when he's saying it to everybody else.
Yeah.
That he's saying that he's consistent both
right.
in front of the camera and
right.
off the air.
Yeah.
I wish I was more into basketball. I got to tell you, when Michael Jordan left, I really didn't pay attention to the Bulls anymore.
Yeah.
I really didn't, and I should.
Well, this team, The way they're playing now, they're really fun to watch. They certainly weren't fun throughout the 82 games of the regular season at times.
But they turned it on.
All year long, they've had this thing where they beat teams that they shouldn't beat that are better than them, and then they lose to teams that just aren't that good.
Yeah, just the thing. Look at all their Thursday night TNT wins.
Yeah.
So clearly, they like the spotlight. There's something about this team playing on this national stage they really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, good. Let's hope it continues. And let's hope the Blackhawks wake up a little bit, because that would be nice to have both teams doing well.
Again, don't harp on them. They're awake. They can't put it together for some reason.
Yeah.
I'm getting mad at everybody getting mad at them because they want to win more than we want them to win.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. But if they're going to get hot, I would say start tomorrow.
Tomorrow would
be
a good time to do it.
Yep.
I'd do it tonight. Just get hot and ready to roll and wake up tomorrow.
But don't use up your hot tonight.
Right.
You don't want to peak too soon.
No.
Just warm up tonight and then get hot tomorrow.
Yeah.
Are you wearing your red sweater tomorrow?
I'm considering it.
I think we have to just bathe the city in, if you don't have a Blackhawks red sweater, then go ahead and wear some kind of red. I think we should do this. We should get Rahm Emanuel on board.
Yeah.
And we have got to give them the mojo to win.
I'm all right with that.
Well, the nice thing is, if it doesn't work for the Hawks, you can wear it Friday for the Bulls.
Right.
All right, good point.
So true. Thank you, Dave.
Okay.
Let us take a break, and then we will come back and present more
Let
show
us
to
pray.
You. Let us pray, everybody. Turn your missalettes to page 83. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. The paper out stock, the friendly faces around the block, break loose from the chains
that are causing you pain. Sing along. You don't remember your own song?
Dunder Mifflin, the people, persons, paper, people. Dunder Mifflin, the people, persons, paper, people.
That's just beautiful is what that is.
Hey. Dunder Mifflin, the people, persons, paper, people.
That is Craig Robinson. That's not, people are hearing this and going, who is that, Lord? No, that's Craig Robinson.
Lord.
That's who they thought that was. Craig Robinson, who you know from so many different, from movies, from television. He's written a book. We'll talk about that. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, for getting the word out, for bringing me home to Chicago. Well, you got to bring me here, but you know.
We sent a plane for you.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome for
that. One of those Cox remote-controlled ones. Right. But, you know, what are you
United
do?
Airlines Cox remote-control plane.
Do you know how nervous Kevin, our producer, is because you're here today? He doesn't usually get nervous with any other guests, but he knows every Office episode inside out.
I did not know that.
He's very, it's true, sir.
I did not know that. Yes. He's very, very kind.
Yes.
And he said, when I met him, he's a big fan. I said, hey. Thank you, Kev.
Yep.
He's a pretty big fan. Pretty big guy. Hey, Kev. Hey. That was Kev, everybody.
Yep. Yeah.
He's not Mike. I don't know if you heard him, but he said, hey.
He said, hey. Yeah. Talk about your growing up years here in Chicago, because I love this story. I just found out your mom was a high school teacher, and your own teacher. You were in your mom's class.
I was in my mom's class 4 years running. She taught choir at Whitney Young High School, the Dolphins. And
I should show him.
Listen to Wendy. Listen to this.
Yes.
How about
something?
That?
Yes.
My claim to fame.
I was trying. Do it again, please.
It gets worse
High
as I go along.
Pays Wendy to come out and
I
at halftime.
Do that.
This is
does.
What we would do if like the team was down.
Yeah.
Let's say basketball game down 1 point.
Yeah.
Okay. 5 seconds left. Ball's going out of bounds. It would get super quiet. Then one person would go, I can't do it like you, but. And then all of a sudden, everybody's going, and we lost every time. But the thing is, that never happened. We didn't do that. But one more time for the roll.
All right, hang on. I got
it. Because you kind of got to laugh it out,
it's
right?
It's beautiful, isn't it?
No, it's. I don't know what I do. I'm just very talented.
Wow!
Isn't that something?
You're getting better.
This is great radio, guys.
Isn't this great? Yeah. Thank you.
Brookfield Zoo has just called. Yeah. They'd like us to go out. So your mother was your teacher for choir. Did you get special treatment?
No. I mean, I was president of the choir, and she did drive me to school back.
Oh,
and
that's
forth.
Nothing.
But until I started driving, then I started driving back. But no, there was no That might have been a little special treatment, but no, not much.
Yeah,
I did get all A's. But you know, other than that, other than that, I did a lot of work for that choir. You know, yeah. I enjoy choir.
Did your family try to push you toward show business or steer you away from?
Oh,
show
steer
business?
Away.
Yeah.
Oh, but now they'll tell you. You know, they were on board the whole time. But no. My dad was like, because I was like, I want to go into comedy, and I was in college, and I. It was the first thing I was serious about, and I knew I was going into that. And I was like going down to Zanies, and if you go to Zanies, it's 1,000 pictures of comedians. And I was like, you know, you can make a living as a comic. And, and you know, I always took my father's word as law. Then this was the first time I realized that he didn't know what he was talking about all the time, because he was like, there's only so many comedians to make. Now, he might have meant, you know, make it. But I was just talking about doing comedy.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I see 1,000 pictures that say different. So it was the first step towards my independence.
And I mean, I have one kid who wants to be a musician, one who wants to be a director of movies. And I say, follow your dream. The money will come, but you got to love what you do.
Loving what you do is
the key. That's the most important.
If you love what you do, then it's all about the journey. It's all about, you know, doing it and figuring it out. If you love anything enough, eventually it will give up its secrets to you.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Did the Secret, the sequel.
Yes. It's
by Craig Robinson.
The sequel.
Did you being on TV every week change your family at all? Like, at some point it must have hit them. That's our son. He's on TV all the time. He's in movies. What did that do to them?
If I go home right now,
yeah,
I will have to take the garbage out.
Is that right? Good.
So no. I mean, they're cool. They're proud. Like, my mother would be, she'd be like, the girl at the grocery store loves you. I'm like, how did the girl... at the cashier at the grocery store know well, I was checking out. I asked, did she watch The Office? Like, Ma, you can't just, what do you know? But yes, they're very proud.
Can I tell you a story about 7 or 8 years ago? You were
I'd rather not. Look, can we, no, I do that because you make me feel comfortable. Okay, go ahead. Let's hear it.
You were playing music with a band, and I was working at another radio station, and the band came up, and we had the names of the guys on a sheet, but we didn't have any background, just your names. And you walked in, and I said to everybody, do you know who that is? That's Craig. He's Daryl in The Office. Craig Robinson is Daryl in The Office. And they all went, he doesn't even look like the guy in The Office. Nobody believed
they didn't believe.
No. But and then once we got on air, I brought it up right away, and they're all like, oh, my God, it's real. He really is the guy in The Office.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, man.
How could he not look like the guy on The Office when he is the guy
you
on
are
The
that
Office?
Guy.
Well, there might have been some weight differential, so they could have
maybe. I don't know. Because the case
is slimming down.
I can talk about it now because I am slimming down. But go ahead.
You are.
You look good.
Yeah, what are you doing to slim down?
You know what? I haven't been drinking alcohol. It's January 10th. I haven't had alcohol since January 10th. And I've been in a gym for, this is like week 11, just like doing cardio and sit-ups.
How do you feel? You feel good?
I feel yeah, amazing. A lot of energy and, you know, not so sluggish getting up out of bed. And I think I'm gonna do the alcohol. I don't know how long, but I know at least 6 months because that's how long it takes your liver to regenerate itself. So
what,
like,
you got this all figured out?
Not all figured out, but you know, I'm definitely in the zone, and it's one thing I learned. I was like, you know, only you can put yourself in the zone,
right?
And only you can take yourself out of the zone. And I always make excuses for getting out. Like last time I dropped a bunch of weight. The holidays came. I was like, oh, the holidays got me. But it's like, Craig, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So here I am. And it's nice to be back working
out. Did something happen that made you decide, I got to do something? And
well, plenty of times there were plenty of wake-up calls. But this particular time was just, I was shooting a movie in Eureka, California, which is up north. And I said, you know what? This movie, it's 2.5 weeks. The movie's called An Evening with Beverly Luff Lynn. I played the title character. Mm-hmm. And so I said, let me just detox, you know? Mm-hmm. Let me just not drink for, you know, a few weeks. And then I turned to, well, hey, as long as you got this going, let's get in some
extend
shape.
It. Good.
Yeah.
It does
feel nice, yeah.
What was your drink of choice?
Vodka cranberry and then some shots of Patron.
Oh.
You're mixing the liquor.
And you know what's crazy? I go on the road and do comedy, so there's a waitress assigned to me. So now it's all, some sparkling water, please. But,
With a lime or a lemon?
However you bring it. surprise me.
Craig Robinson is here. He looks just like the guy Daryl on The Office. You'd be amazed if you were sitting next to him. You'd think it was him. He's
not at that one
out.
Studio.
No, not at any other place in town. But here, yes. Jake the Fake Keeps It Real is the name of the book. We'll talk about that next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We've got Craig Robinson in the studio, and I can tell that you have more energy because you're pacing around the studio waiting for Bill to finish that commercial. You're getting
How?
Better. How? I don't really know.
It's just that sounds a real great. Slowed down version.
Right. So we'll tape it and we'll speed it up.
Yes.
Whitney
yes.
Young Dolphins.
Can we talk about this book?
Yes,
this
please.
Is exciting news.
Absolutely.
Craig has written a book along with two other guys whose names are on there. I'm assuming they helped you write it.
Well, it's very much a collaboration. And, yeah. Adam Mansbach is the head writer, if you will. He did most of the heavy lifting. He was the one pulling stories and stuff out of me. He's a bestseller on the New York Times. And then Keith Knight did the illustrations. So, yeah, it was a blessing. It was awesome to work with these guys and put this project for it. It's called Jake the Fake Keeps It Real. It's about a kid faking his way into a music and performing arts academy. And he the way he does that is he plays one song really well on the piano. He's played it 1,000 times. He played it and got into the academy. And now he's afraid of being found out and being found out of being a fraud. But it follows him through his first semester there, and he's got some quirky, crazy characters that, including a teacher named Mr. Allen, who kind of shows him how to live in the moment through his assignments. And then I won't give the ending away, but Jake realizes something awesome about himself. So there you go.
Is Bro Diddley featured in this book at
Bro
all?
Bro Diddley. There's a lot of Jake's sister's boyfriend. He always, adds bro to everything.
Yeah.
So, bro Diddley, broski, brilanthropist, all
it
of that kind
of everything.
Stuff.
How did this come to you, Craig? What was happening that made you think of this story?
You know, I used to be a school teacher here in Chicago, taught K-8 music for 3 years, and before that a year in Indiana. And so I wanted to reconnect with those roots, and it kind of fell into my lap to a new Keith, and then meeting Adam, and then we just, like I said, Adam, super professional, genius, and it was like, away we go. We got this idea, and we're going.
What age is this targeted for?
It's middle schoolers, but, it skews a little younger, and it also, parents have read it, and they're like, oh, we read it in, an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's a quick read. It's awesome. It's fun. Yeah.
This would make, I'm sure you've already thought of this, but this would make for a good full-length feature animated film.
Well, we're
or a series.
We'll see what happens. Your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. There's definitely a couple of more books coming in a series. So.
Good. That's
and
exciting.
You're going to be out at Anderson's Bookshop. Well, it's Anderson's Bookshop is presenting. It's actually happening at Naperville Center Stage Theater, 1665 Quincy Ave, 7 o'clock. Is that tonight?
I thought it was what's it called? Kids.
Do it as a dolphin. Yep, that's what it is.
Kids what? This is the info I have.
Oh, wait, here it is. Kids Cabaret.
Kids Cabaret.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's the right address. But
the Kids Cabaret
Kids
is
Cabaret.
What it is. All right. And that's tonight?
That is tonight.
Tickets are required.
7 o'clock.
You can go to Anderson's Bookshop to find out more information.
Do you do a Q&A at these?
Yes.
Yeah?
I'll do a Q&A. And if they want me to read a little bit, I'll read.
Yeah.
And it's mostly Q&A and then a lot of signing.
What's the silliest question anyone's asked you at a Q&A?
Let me see. The silliest. I love that. I've only done one so far.
Oh, is that right?
That was two days ago in New York. And so it hasn't been silly, but people are like, hey, would you sing the song from The Office? There's a lot of Office fans come out.
Really?
So it's a lot of Office questions. And so don't, that's okay. You can ask whatever you want. So they had me sing the song you played on my intro.
Oh, nice.
Dunder Mifflin, except for I did the Daryl's version. Out of paper. Out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block.
Why don't you bring your keyboard with?
Well, that's a lot of lugging around.
I guess.
Now, if you had one, we could rock it out. But and nobody invited me to bring a keyboard.
What happened, Craig?
It's actually right downtown.
It's close. We could get you one. what happened on the show? Because you were like an ancillary player. You were in the background, and then all of a sudden somebody took a liking to you, and you were front and center, and that's not a bad thing. What happened?
You know, I still don't know.
No?
But I would get the word that things were happening and then forget about it because they tell me story ideas for the next year. They'd be like, yeah, you and Kelly are going to have a relationship. I'm like, okay, cool. And then a year later it happened. Yeah. But I didn't know. But I had the sweetest schedule in Hollywood. I would go in when I was the ancillary player. I would go in and do like a week, and then 6 weeks later I could work again, and they'd be like, yes. And then all of a sudden I was there every day, which, you know, is even nicer. It's just a lot more work.
It is hard work. I mean, we watch a TV show. I've never been on a TV show. A lot of hours go into that.
There's a lot of hours, and especially like on that kind of show with so many people getting time, you don't. It's a lot of downtime, it was enjoyable and stuff, but you know, it just makes the day go a lot longer when you're not working.
Yeah.
Now I am doing a new show right now, called Ghosted. It's with Adam Scott and myself. It's kind of a comedic X-Files.
Oh, cool.
If you will, yeah. So we actually shot the pilot. We're testing it now. That, you know, recutting it, all that. They got a network test coming up, and I don't know how much I can say about it. I think I just said everything, though. And
which network?
Fox.
Fox, okay.
And so we'll see if they pick it up or what have you. But that was a lot of fun. And when you're working, you know, the days just, I mean, I bet these hours just fly by.
They fly by.
Yeah.
Yeah, with totally. You guys. You're having fun.
You know,
coming back from break, you're always ready. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, do what you love.
Do what you love. There you go.
So if you
Confucius said, choose a job you love. You never have to work a day in your life.
He's right. That Confucius boy, he nailed it.
I would have married him had I been around.
You'd wish
Wendy Fucius Confucius right now. Wouldn't that have been nice?
I wish Confucius had Twitter. That would be dope.
All right. So, of acting, of comedy, of music, and of writing books, because you're doing all of them. If you had to pick one, would that be an easy choice or not?
Music.
Would it be music?
My first love. Yeah. And music. You know, sometimes I get up on stage and just play the piano.
Yeah.
Like that'll be if I like drop in somewhere or what have you and just play and like let the crowd hop in and sing along. Now when I do my act, it's audience participation, but you know, obviously a lot more chit chat and you know, singing, what have you. But music is, you know, my first love, and I could just like get lost doing that.
That's great.
It's such a pleasure to meet you. It really is. Such a big fan. Can we get this quick phone call in? Because George has been on hold. And
shout out to Dylan and Michael.
Oh, my sons. Thank you. George, you had a question.
Confucius is their father, by the way.
Huh? Yeah. That's not for her. I wanted to introduce myself with my own dolphin, if you want to hear it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, let's do it.
Not bad.
That's pretty good.
You're the worst, Craig.
Can you two, like, have a little dolphin conversation? Just
go ahead. You start it, George.
And, well, okay, I know you guys are living a long time.
George, you are doing a dolphin conversation, okay? Start it up, and then Wendy's going to go, and then y'all going to go for about 15 seconds, maybe?
Let's yeah, go, Let's George. Hear. Start it. George, we got to give him something, man.
How about some applause? That was fantastic.
I wish I did a Dan Marino impression so I could be part of that, but I can't. Oh, that's not bad.
That's bad. All right, George, real quickly, what's your question?
You know, okay, you guys kind of touched on it already, but your character evolved so heavily on The Office. I mean, like you said, from the background to the forefront, you became my favorite character, you know, within a season by far. I mean, I absolutely love all your work. I want to know, how involved were you in the process of the evolution of your character? I mean, in the writing process. I mean, did you just show up and read the script, or were you involved in the evolution of your character?
George, I became your favorite? Oh, my God. Thank you.
Absolute favorite. I love everything you do.
George, thank you. I appreciate that, sir. I need you out there on the front line, so thank you very much. And you'll be happy to know I had nothing to do with the evolvement. I came in, and it was like, boom, here's the script, and this is what you're doing. And those writers, you know, credit them. They captured our voices so amazingly, like to the point where towards, you know, last few years, they were writing things that I would say naturally. So it was like, wow, this is, they know what's, you know, they're paying attention. So yeah, that was all them, you know, figuring out. And Greg Daniels, guy leading the way. Greg Daniels, you know, is the executive super producer. He developed The Office for American Television. Okay, George.
Fries are done.
Guess that was enough from you, from me.
George didn't hit the button.
He didn't hang up. It just meant the hour.
No, I'm right here.
But George, we got to run because that means fries are done and it's time to move along. So.
Thank you, George. Well, that concludes tonight's episode of Dolphin Talk. Craig
Thanks,
Robinson
George.
Was our guest. An honor to see you and talk to you again.
An hour of just Dolphin Talk.
Whenever you want. The door's always open. Just come by and talk like a mammal.
Kids Cabaret tonight, Naperville Center Stage Theater, 1665 Quincy, 7 p.m. Tickets are required. Go to Anderson's Bookshop to find more information.
The Fake Keeps It Real. Anywhere books are sold, people. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for that support.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. A quick break and then more show. How can you not be smitten?
Once smitten, twice shy.
Phil and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it. It's Phil Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And pretty regularly, we are joined by Dr. John Duffy, who has joined us once again today. He's a clinical psychologist. He's written the book, The Available Parent. We hope to see a new book out of you pretty soon. That's coming along?
I'm hoping so. Yes, I'm working on it. I promise you.
All right. And also, check out his podcast, Undo Anxiety, really touching on many things in life that if it doesn't relate to you 100%, you still learn from it. So great job with that.
Thank you so much.
John, there's a couple of topics that have come to light in recent times, and I know you wanted to discuss this, the stifling of creativity. Go into some detail on this.
Yeah, you know, my wife Julie and I sat down to record a podcast the other day, and we ended up talking about creativity and how little of it we actually use. Mm-hmm. So most of us are creatively talented in some way. And our kids are creatively talented in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think when we express ourselves creatively, we undo a lot of anxiety and depression and a lot of the things that hold us back when we decide, no, I've got to work more, or I should be out in the yard. I'm going to put that, or I'm really not that good a singer. I'm not that good a painter. I really can't dance. Once you decide what you can't do, then I think you limit yourself. And that is depressing, you know, because you feel like, oh, that whole creative part of my life is over. And sometimes I think, boy, if you would just tap your creativity, you probably don't need me. You probably don't need the medication you're on. You know, a lot of things could be undone if you just allowed yourself to be creative,
again. Don't you find it's okay for children to have all kinds of creative outlets, but as an adult, it's like, you're a grown-up now. You can't
act like one.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the societal norm for sure, is like, you know, let's let our kids try different things. Although a lot of us are still hung up on, like, is she going to be good at that, or is it going to be embarrassing? Will she be a good singer? You know, but even more so as adults, I think we're very reluctant to try something new that's creative. I picked up the guitar about 10 years ago, and I remember how reluctant I was myself just to, like, play that thing one time in public. You know, it was harrowing,
Right.
So, I think that, you know, the more we do it, the better off we are. But I think you're right. We have this kind of cultural reluctance to do that because there's other important business to be done, with air quotes around it.
I don't know why I always think of John Mahoney from Frasier, but didn't he start acting when he was older?
In his 40s, I think. Late 30s or early 40s.
Mm. So, and he did pretty well for himself. And it's like, you know, I have a drum kit that's unused in our basement, and I'm thinking, I want to take drum lessons. Half of me says, why? But the other half of me says, I took two lessons. It's kind of fun. Why not?
Right. Why not? I was an accountant when I was younger, and on a whim, I took classes at Second City, improv classes, and I kind of found my next calling through those classes. So sometimes you don't know where this creative venture is going to lead, and it may not lead to the main stage at Second City, but it might lead to becoming a therapist or changing careers somehow, you know? But if you don't allow yourself to kind of broaden your thinking, and that's what I think creativity does. It kind of opens our minds a little bit.
Yeah.
Then I think we get stuck in this kind of narrow focus, this little lens.
Do you think that this explains the boom in adult coloring books? Because all of a sudden, if you go into a bookstore, there's 80 or 100 adult coloring books. That never used to happen, but now people need that outlet, don't they?
I so think that that's exactly right. Yeah. Adult coloring books and these places that have like a come drink wine and paint a vase.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
love that.
Right? And people love that. Yeah. People like, you know, you see on Facebook, people holding up their pictures and they're proud. I think people are amazed at what they can create and forget that they're creative at all.
Right.
You know,
last
so it's really
night,
cool.
I went with three of my girlfriends, four of us went to this cooking class. And it was a blast. It was bring your own alcohol. They had water and they gave you the items to cook. We made homemade meatballs. We made gnocchi with pesto sauce. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the other part of it is, to your point, Bill, like as adults, we don't have fun like that much anymore, right?
We don't.
So we'll go to a party and we'll stand around and we'll drink. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Or something like that or eat. But we don't create. And sometimes when you get together and you create things, Wendy and I have both been involved in an open mic night in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. There's an extra element of like joy to that. And, you know, and kind of a revelation. You get somebody coming up to you telling you like, wow, that was really impressive. And you think like, okay, maybe I've got something.
Right.
You know? and maybe not. You haven't got something enough to go professional, but something enough to enjoy yourself doing it. Because if you're self-conscious, you're not going to enjoy yourself.
Exactly. And you'll open up a hobby, right? So, you know, you'll release some of your stress and anxiety in that way, right? I'll spend some time on the weekend just playing music or painting or, mm-hmm. you know, or dancing or doing whatever the thing is that I kind of thought I wanted to do my whole life, but I thought, that's not me. I'm not a painter. I'm not artistic like that. And
so for people who feel a deficiency, what's their first move? Just pick a thing or two that you've always wanted to try and finally get through and try it?
Yeah. You know, I think I was thinking about this very thing and I was thinking like, how do I coach somebody through this?
Yeah.
And part of it is don't rely on a lot of coaching. Don't overthink it. Yeah. Just go and do it. You know what I mean? So, you know, if you're inclined to paint, get an easel, get a canvas and just give it a shot. You know what I mean? And, you know, or pick up a guitar and try it. Sign up for that dance class. Sign up for that acting class. Try something.
Right.
And
never too late, is it?
Never, ever too late. Ever. I mean, I love your John Mahoney story.
Yeah.
It suggests that very clearly.
Yeah. Dr. John Duffy is his name. If you have a question or a comment, you know how to reach us, right? We're 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a minute or two. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Clinical psychologist, best-selling author, certified life coach, wonderful guy, Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us. What's the next topic we want to cover? I know we were talking about this off the air a little bit.
I want to go off book for just a little bit and talk about something that Wendy and I were discussing yesterday. And here's what it is. Every once in a while, a story comes down the line about a teacher, a female teacher, that has had an affair with one of their students.
Yes.
All right. I want to talk about the psychology of that because they have to know how wrong it is to be in a position of power, to be an older person and taking advantage of a younger person. But then the side note to this is we've all noticed that for some reason these women aren't desperate the way you would think they'd be. They don't look desperate. They aren't desperate.
You're saying they're attractive.
Young, attractive women. Yeah.
They wouldn't have trouble finding a date.
Right, right.
So what's going on there behind the scenes that we can't figure out?
The argument I hear most frequently that resonates most is there's something regressive about their personalities. So there's something unfulfilled about those years of their lives.
Oh.
And so they're kind of going back in time for themselves.
Yeah.
Because I get your point. It feels like, well, these women seem like they have options that are far more appropriate and legal and won't get them in the kind of hot water that they get into so regularly. So the argument is that there is kind of this psychology playing out in their mind where their own teenage years weren't as fulfilling in relational ways as they would have hoped. And so they regress back and, you know, look to fulfill, kind of relive those years directly.
It's amazing to me because you think about all they have at stake. Many times they already have a family of their own and they certainly have their career.
Yeah.
And to risk all that, it almost doesn't make sense. And yet they keep doing it.
Well, you know, another thing that I'll throw in here is I work with an awful lot of people who can achieve great success and feel like, I don't know if I deserve this. And they will find a way to sabotage their lives. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a voice in their head, whether it's a parent from 20 years ago or somebody from yesterday, that says, you know, who do you think you are, you know, to achieve the success? Why do you think you're worth it? And so they play that out, and that's where the sabotage comes from. But it's a really curious phenomenon. You're right, because it seems so wildly unnecessary.
Right.
Yeah.
John, do you look at this as there's some parallel? I'll use Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes was the guy who headed up Fox News.
Yeah.
And was a very wealthy man and a very powerful man. But then allegations came out from several different women, and I'm sure he's not the only person, but he's the first one that came to mind. Bill O'Reilly is another one all of a sudden.
Who was just let go from Fox.
Yeah. So, again, I always say to myself, don't they consider the balance of what they're doing and what the long-term effect would be, losing your career, losing all your money? A rational person would say it's not worth it, and yet it happens all the time for some reason.
A rational person absolutely would. I think when you achieve a certain degree of power and notoriety and you surround yourself with people who support that, you forget how fallible you are. You forget that, you know, your mistakes can have ramifications beyond just you, and you presume that you have the
like
luxury.
You're untouchable, kind
you're of? Untouchable, right? So that, you know, like it's reminiscent to me of the Billy Bush tape with Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, that to me had this era of, you know, well, if you're a famous guy, if you're a star, you can do whatever you want, you know? And I think there is that vibe out there that, you know, Ailes in particular, in this position of enormous power over a number of attractive women who were working for him.
Right.
And it seems like he felt very much at liberty to abuse that, and he felt like he held sway over them because, well, I'm your boss. I can fire you today, you know?
Well, let's throw Bill Cosby into the discussion as well, because at that time, Bill Cosby was, for a long time, America's best TV dad. He's a guy that all the country, if not the world, just loved and respected. So that guy was able to fool us.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Amazing. And, you know, when I think about Bill Cosby, I suspect, and again, this is just a suspicion, that there's a deeper layer there of self-loathing because, you know, like, because it's so darkly criminal, the things that he admitted to doing, you know, that I can't imagine that he feels good about himself on any level and probably knew every moment of the way that he was perpetuating a fraud. So he's another, to my thinking, another self-sabotager in the grandest fashion, you know?
And so, you hear a lot of people like that, and we know a couple that they do stand in their own way of success.
Yeah.
Things start going really well, and, you know, they do something to mess it up.
Right. Happens all the time. I mean, Cosby is almost a jaw-dropping example, right?
Like
because he seemed like he had created this image that seemed so squeaky clean, and the things he did were the polar opposite, you know? So he really ruined his reputation forever.
He would overcompensate, you know, he went out of his way to explain to, like, rap artists that they're not representing the black community very well in the way they dress and the way they speak. And he would try so hard to give a good example, but then we find out what was going on behind the scenes. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a certain type of pathology. I think when you get kind of narcissistic enough and you believe what's written about you enough, you think you're kind of above the law, and you kind of separate these parts of yourself. You know what I mean? You can compartmentalize in your mind this kind of, oh, I'm committing these crimes against women, but, you know, I should tell these kids to stay in school.
Yeah.
And I get to be self-righteous about that because I'm America's father. You know?
Yeah.
And he was so against kids not having a father figure. And when we got to meet him backstage, which was such a thrill before this all broke, I had brought my son Dylan. Jim had to work. It was our anniversary. And I introduced Bill Cosby to my son Dylan. And the first thing out of Cosby's mouth was, where's Dylan's dad?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, his dad's also my husband. It's actually our anniversary. And I was like, didn't know what to say because I was shocked.
But he wanted to see the nuclear family together and functioning as a union.
Right.
And it's so strange.
It is.
Then you find out what was really going on and you go, why do you care about that when you're having so much problems?
Right. And it's hard to reconcile that those two things, this pathology and this self-righteousness, can exist in the same lens, in the same mind at the same time. And yet this happens in a lot of people, not to the extent that we see in Bill Cosby, because not everybody's as well known.
Yeah.
But a lot of people play this out where they'll, you know, do something kind of reprehensible on the one hand and feel like, well, the good I do kind of balances that out, you know, or overbalances that out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cosby did go on to tell Dylan, you know, since it's your parents' anniversary, maybe when you get home, you could go play some video games or something so mom and dad could have a little time together. So on the way home, Dylan's like, are you and dad going to do it? Oh. I'm like, none of your business. And he goes, well, Bill Cosby said you should. It was a weird turnaround, though.
It's an odd
like,
moment.
Like, where's yes. your father?
Right.
And then...
Yes.
Dylan, go get lost and have some Jello pudding.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it
kinda
seems
weird.
Like he was kind of losing
yeah.
his message somewhere in there. Yeah.
Without a doubt. John, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. It's Dr. John Duffy. If people want to hear your podcast, then they should. Their best bet is to do what?
Yeah, it is here on WGN Plus. It's on iTunes. It's called Undo Anxiety, and I hope you give it a listen.
Good, good. Thanks so much, John.
Thanks, guys.
A quick break. Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. And he prepped the pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy, they all said. Warren Zevon wrote this song for David Hochberg, who is here in studio with us. David, where would people know you from? Pearl Mortgage.
Pearl Mortgage, most
yeah, that's
likely.
Right.
Yeah.
When, yep.
WGN Radio mm-hmm. is another good place. WGN TV.
The Ice Follies. You remember the Ice Follies
say, yeah.
for a number of years?
Ice Follies.
Monster Truck rallies.
Right, Monster
rallies.
Truck rallies.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm big into that. And cooking.
3-time Cy Young Award winner.
Well, yeah, I don't want to bring that up to brag. But yeah. And, that's a number of places.
Yeah.
And I give singing lessons on the side
oh,
as
I didn't
well.
Know that
yes.
part. How exciting.
Yeah, I'm very big into singing lessons on the North Shore. They're lined up outside the door.
Let's talk real stuff, okay?
Yeah. What are you trying to say?
Well, someone who is buying a house for the first time, if I may just go back in time 20 years ago, it's the scariest thing you've ever done.
Doesn't have to be.
I know, and with you around, we didn't have you when we bought our only house we've owned.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many questions. You know how I get when I hear money and fees and amounts and I start freaking out?
Yeah.
You need to have someone kind of hold your hand through, especially your first home buying experience. And refining is a little stressful as well. You're the guy. That's what I'm saying.
Well, thank you. And it doesn't have to be. It should be an enjoyable experience. Yes, you get a little nervous because you're buying a lot of people. It's their biggest purchase that they've made up until that point in their lives. You know, let's face it, you're 24, 20. Think about my first house. I was 25, my first condo, 25, 26. And here I'm spending $119,000 back in 1990 something at 2800 Lakeshore Drive. And that condo is probably worth $350 right now that I bought for $119,000. And up until that point, the most expensive thing I probably bought was a $90 blazer to go on a job interview. And here I'm laying
a
out,
blazer.
I'm putting out, you know, with the leather patches on the sleeves.
Nice.
I was sharp looking back then, baby.
Nice.
Plus the length of the term is what freaks people out too. It's like,
years?
Oh my God, I don't know if I'll be alive in 30 years. Will I have a job in 30 years?
We get a lot of that from more experienced homeowners that are looking to buy their retirement home for some reason, think that they have to take out a 10-year or 15-year fixed loan
mm-hmm.
because they're over 65 years old, and that couldn't be further from the truth. There's laws against discrimination against race and age and sex and creed and everything else. You know, if you're 95 years old, God bless you for making it that long, number one. And if you qualify for a 30-year fixed loan, you could take out a 30-year fixed loan. You know, are you going to be here when you're 125 when the loan is paid off? You know, the odds are probably not. But if you qualify for a 30-year fixed loan, you could take out a 30-year fixed loan no matter how old you are. I get, you know, we get that at least once a month. Yeah, I'm 78. I'm going to be buying a home. I want to go into a 15-year fixed loan. I'm like, why do you want to do that and jack up the payment when you're 78 years old and pay an extra $700-$800 a month on a $400,000 mortgage? Oh, you know, I'm probably not going to make it for 30 years. I'm like, well, you know, there's laws that prohibit people from discriminating against any borrower, any age,
really?
As to the product that they want to take out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Take out the 30-year, keep the payment low. If you want to pay extra, God bless you, pay extra. If not, then, you know, take a look at doing a reverse mortgage. We're doing a lot of reverse mortgages for experienced homeowners over 62 that are looking to buy homes.
But the financier never wants to be the one to initiate the fact that the person making the loan might not be here in 15 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not the type of conversation. Hi, how you doing? Oh, yeah, you're probably not going to be here when the loan pays off.
That's
bad. It's not a really good opening to a sales presentation or a sales sales call. You know, you might start it out that way, and that's why you're on radio. But, me being a professional sales mortgage professional, probably not the right way to open up a conversation.
Right. You don't bring out an actuary table and according to this.
No.
You might not be here Wednesday.
The abacus on the wall and saying, the odds of you hitting, 30, reaching the term on this loan,
right.
Probably not really that good.
Right.
So, probably
don't
not part, not part of my sales pitch.
Is there such a thing as no hidden costs at all? Can you get, you make these little a dollar here and $2 there, is there such a thing as no hidden costs?
No, there are costs with everything, right? Okay, there were costs for the train ride I took down here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though somebody might say, it didn't cost you anything to come down. Well, yeah, I bought a 10 pack for $52 and put it on my credit card, and I'm going to use one to go home today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, costs are costs. Listen, everything's got a cost. You have appraisal, you have credit reports. Some people do a ton of loans, like Pearl Mortgage. Closed, I believe, over 2,000 loans last month.
But
so,
people say
last month,
right?
That's a good month.
That's a good month for Pearl Mortgage.
But you always hear other people in your line of work say
no closing
costs.
And that's the biggest bunch of crap and garbage out there. No closing costs, and we're synonymous with low closing costs. I'll tell you what, here, and here's the deal. I will challenge anybody that advertises on this radio station. And every listener out there, right? You mm-hmm. bring me a loan estimate from any lender that advertises on this station,
mm-hmm.
and I guarantee you that our closing costs and our rate will be lower than any other advertiser. You have to bring me a loan estimate. Don't give me this email of what they're quoting you. A loan estimate, you're tied to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if I can't meet or beat it, I'm affiliated, as you know, with seven or eight different charities that I am fond to,
mm-hmm.
and I'll make a donation to any one of those charities or a charity of your choice if I can't beat it. And that's a guarantee. Okay, so, stop with the low closing costs. I've got loan estimates from other lenders that advertise on the station that constantly say they have low, closing costs. And my closing costs are $1,000 less. So our definitions of low closing costs, their definition's $1,000 higher than mine. And then they're like, and the rate doesn't mean anything. Listen, it all comes down to the overall package. The overall package you're going to get from me is going to be a hell of a lot lower than any other of the advertisers on the station. You don't believe it? Then bring it on. Okay, that's all I have to say. I'm not afraid of any competition, and the companies with their blowhorns and their rockets and everything like that. Guess what? It costs a lot of money to buy all that TV advertising. Guess who's paying for it? You, the listener.
You, Bill.
Bill, you're paying for everybody.
For it.
Yeah, it's only you.
That's crazy. Why do I pay for that?
Because you're such a nice guy.
I guess.
Can we take a question from Polly before we take a commercial break? 312-981-7200. His name is David Hochberg. He's at Pearl Mortgage, P-E-R-L Mortgage. And how do people
It's Pearl David. It's Pearl. I think I spelled it wrong on the cheat sheet I gave you. It's perldavid.com. Or you just go to WGNDavid. And it'll take you right to my
Mine
website.
Says Pearl Bailey. That can't be right. I don't think she's around anymore.
Hi, Polly. You liked that one, didn't you?
Yeah, that was good.
There's something seriously wrong with you, Bill. Not you, Polly.
All right,
what's up, Polly?
Okay. I want to sell my house.
Yeah.
It needs about $20,000 worth of repairs, I'm thinking. Because my air conditioner broke. I might need... And I don't know if I should get a home equity loan and do all this repair, just sell the house or refinance?
That's a great question.
That is a good question.
I'm not quite sure which way to go.
It's a great question. We get this question all the time. When do you plan on selling your house, Polly?
Well,
6 months,
like
a year?
Yes. Within 6 months, whenever I can. I just know right now the things that need to be done to it.
Right.
I could get more money if I fixed it up.
But I
don't have all the funds to do.
I got it.
The things.
How much do you owe on your house?
Sorry?
How much do you owe on your house?
$140,000.
What's your house worth?
I think it could be $200,000 to $220,000.
Okay, so here's what you're going to do. Here's what you're going to do. Well, what's it worth right now in its current state?
I'd probably say like 180 to 190.
180 to 190. Okay, here's what we're going to do. And your credit's good. Your income's good.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. You're going to call up my team at First Midwest Bank. You're going to call up Anna and Sarah at First Midwest Bank, and you're going to talk to them about taking out what's called the home equity line of credit. It's a checkbook mm-hmm. against your house. It's a simple checkbook against your house, and you're going to use those funds to make the necessary renovations and improvements of your home that you need that will net you out more than what you're putting into your house. And so your house shows pristine, and you're going to get the top dollar on it. Where do you live? What town?
In Batavia.
Okay, I've got great realtors out in Batavia if you're not working with one. Who could?
Not yet. I wasn't sure where to. I'm like, I got to start.
I will hook you up with a realtor in Batavia who will walk you through and tell you what to do and what not to do, make recommendations of what to do and what not to do with the line of credit you're going to get from First Midwest Bank. Okay.
Okay.
So how does she reach you?
It's very simple. Just go to WGN David, or you call me at the office 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 312-751-1333. And I'll connect you with my team. Okay.
Great. Oh, thank you.
All good
right,
luck.
Good luck, Polly.
All right, we have to take a break. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's David Hochberg here on 720 WGN. Derek, you have a great question that I think a lot of people would be interested in. Go ahead.
Yes. First off, thank you, David, for and Jose for the mortgage I got.
Oh, thanks, Derek. I appreciate the business. I'll let Jose know.
And I have a question about paying off my wife's student loans. Is there any way to do like a one lump sum pay?
Well, sure.
like you would a credit card but not pay it all off for a discounted rate?
Have you tried to consolidate those student loans yet, Derek, or no?
No, we have not yet.
All right. So are they federal loans or are they private loans?
I believe they're all private.
Okay. So what I would do is there's a company called SoFi.com, SoFi.com. I'll say it slower because people accuse me of talking fast and I say listen faster. But SOFI.com, they're a private company that consolidates student loans, both private and federal. So what I would do is I would go to them and see if you could get the payment knocked down. And, chunking it down, you're not going to, lower the payment. So I'm not a big fan of paying things off faster if you got a good rate, if you can invest the money in something else. But if you want to make your student loans go away, just start chunking it down, but definitely go to SoFi.com. I didn't get nothing from it. I don't get an override. I don't get anything.
You like helping people.
It's good information. Go to SOFI.com. It's like taking out a mortgage, right? You have to qualify via credit and an income. And if you qualify and they could drop your rate, knock yourself out there, buddy, and save yourself a ton of interest.
Thanks, Derek. Good luck.
Thanks, Derek.
All right. Thank you.
Can I ask you a quick student loan question?
Sure.
I'm currently putting two daughters through college, and student
How's
loans.
How's that feel?
You need money for lunch?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Student loans, the interest rate is very high, but home equity loans, the interest rate is very low.
Right.
Is there some way for me to borrow money and call it a home equity loan, but really,
yes,
in fact, I'm getting it?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. And we can introduce you to.
And I can be honest with the bank about that. They're cool with that. I don't have to pretend.
You can use it for anything you want,
you can
correct?
Use it for whatever you want. Yeah. Right. You take out a line
surgery?
Of credit.
Surgery?
Yeah. Surgery. Yeah, you need
is
a lot of that.
Surgery you
want? Need a lot of surgery.
Yeah. and people could go to Facebook Live, David Hochberg, Pro Mortgage on Facebook. We are streaming this right now.
Yeah.
So people could see all the surgery that you actually need.
I've had a lot done,
right.
And I'm going to have a lot more done.
And the medication that you really need to make yourself right. But
Kaopectate.
Well, and some other, yeah.
Wow.
So there's other things that people can do with the line of credit.
Yes.
Like pay off their home faster.
You could do that.
Oh, yes.
Sure.
Yes. Like if you plan on moving, like Polly earlier, she wants to do renovations on her home. Take out a line of credit. Put the money back into her home. Make sure she talks with a realtor that I'm going to introduce you to. So the money that she's putting in her home is the right money to invest in her home. So she gets a return on fixing the things that she wants to fix. But a line of credit is definitely, in your $1.5 million home, you get a line of credit for at least $600,000. And I'm joking. You live in a $2 million home.
I just
actually.
Where did my
yeah?
My house
how'd your
went
home appreciate that?
That quickly? Wow.
No, but if you take out a line of credit, and a lot of people do this.
Yeah.
The last time I was on, I talked to a guy. Called me up. I have student loans. Everything else. We took out a line of credit for like $200,000. He owed $100,000 on his home and $100,000 on his two kids' college education.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured out at paying what he was paying, he'd pay off his mortgage and the student loans 5 years faster and save a ton of interest because he was making that gigantic payment anyway.
Yeah.
And what people don't realize is that these student loans, where they get you, is the term of the loan. Most of these student loans are 10-year terms.
Yeah.
So the interest rates are like 6-7%. Then you have to pay them off in 10 years. If I did that on a mortgage, it would be a usury rate, and I'd have Lisa Madigan and the feds on my back
sure.
saying, these are are ridiculously abusively predatory loans.
But they're not if it's a student loan.
But, you know, the federal government could, you know, loan you that money at 7, 8, 9% over a 10-year period of time, and it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Not knowing what your kids are going to actually get into and how much money you're taking out is actually going to be recovered in the field that they want to go into.
Comes.
Yeah, I'm fired
I
up
I just have to say, though, you think a home equity line of credit, in your head, you think I need to build the equity in my home by repairing things. But all you're doing is borrowing against the equity that you've built up in your home, hence the name, correct?
To pay off, exactly, you're 100% right, to pay off other things or maybe buy another property.
Right.
You know, there's other things you could do with the money.
It's moving your money around, and David really helps you figure out how to do it.
It's money manipulation.
Thank you, David.
That's all it is. Anytime, Bill.
That's David Hochberg, again, the website that they want to visit.
It's WGNDavid.com. Mm-hmm. The phone number is 312-751-1333. We have a ton of low and no down payment options. So if you're interested in learning how to buy a house with no money down when you're not a veteran, we have a great program to help your listeners out, and we'd love to help your listeners with that. So 312-751-1333, WGNDavid.com. And this segment, this whole interview, will be on my Facebook, which is David Hochberg Pearl Mortgage. And you could see everything we've just done the past 30 minutes.
Perfect.
You're all over the place.
Thank you, David.
You know what?
Yeah. Spread it.
Yep. Just
cut
like it
thin and spread it thinner, baby.
That's what it is.
Or cut it thick and spread it thinner.
All right. Goodbye.
Yeah. Goodbye. Thanks for playing.
Thanks. Take a quick break. We'll decipher what was just said. And then and Hawk and Wimpy will take you the rest of the way. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.